the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Get off the set.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. And what is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course! Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars! This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! So careless. 1.21 gigawatts. Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's OSHA Ziz here. Sorry about the late start for the Mad Science Show. Went to fire up the old PC there and had some problems there. Wasn't no desktop icons on there, and turned out it was a simple fix as far as temporary anyway. The Explorer deal loaded up twice in the task manager, so I had to shut it down and restart one by itself. I don't know what's going on with that. My virus protection hasn't showed any viruses, and you know, I'll figure it out. It's just aggravating. I apologize for that. Anyway, gonna be a short show today, Pierce, but you know, I was thinking My doggone theories on how electricity actually works has gotten me in a lot of trouble because of the way I see things mechanically, and I understand I'm a little bit different than the average Joe. And so with that said, I'm more into the frequency ranges at which the electrical waves actually do their job there. And so that's why I'm always interested in strictly high voltage static discharges and so on and so forth, is because what my ultimate goal is as far as a actual generator is to essentially take the load off the generator itself. If you can imagine, when you have a generator head, and when you, let's say it's a gas-powered generator head, and you fire that thing up, and everything's, running smooth, everything's going good, and then you flip on the light, put it under a load, then you hear that generator bog down. And the more that you put onto that generator, like some generators anywhere 1,500 watts all the way up to 5,000, 6,000 watts, and some even higher if you got a really good generator. They do have some 10,000 watt generators, and I think even higher than that you can buy out there on the market. But with that said, depending on how many watts that generator will actually produce, how heavy of a load it can actually withstand will determine on how much it bogs down whenever you start turning things on. And so, as I've been studying in the alternative energy deal and watching all the different things going on and seeing the difference between the frequency range at which a Tesla coil will go and the frequency range at which the Slayer exciter will go, then I understood that there were differences in actual, I'm going to say styles of electricity or types of electricity. As far as I'm concerned, electrical waves are in all different ranges, such as like an AM radio, an FM radio, and the different channels that you can tune into. Every time that somebody keys down on a radio, it essentially sends a signal through the air, an electrical wave through the air, a magnetic pulse or whatever. But then it is picked up on the antenna on the other side and then transferred back into information. And so I was thinking, why couldn't this be done with just any frequency range to actually bring it up high enough to send across to wherever you're going to go, like Tesla's wireless energy transfer, and then pick it up on the other side and then convert it back into usable current. The current watts and amps thing that keeps getting me in trouble. So whenever I'm looking at the Slayer exciter, and I know that that specific frequency is definitely different than the frequency that's coming off of the Tesla coil, you can actually tell the difference after you've been working with them for quite some time, the difference in the smell between a normal Tesla coil, the ozone that's created, and the smell that's actually generated off of the energy that's coming off the Slayer exciter. At least I can, anyway. I mean, I can tell the difference in the smell, ozone and whatever the frequency range is that the Slayer exciter is producing. But either way, I've tested with both types of frequency ranges, and some frequency ranges won't energize certain styles of coils or the gas in there unless they're like really super high. The gas inside of a stove starter bulb, not a stove starter, a fluorescent bulb starter bulb, the argon gas inside there. Now, when it's beefed up, it'll get it, but at a lower range, it doesn't seem to want to energize that gas. So that gave me even more confirmation of what it was that I was thinking. And then I realized that there's certain materials such as aluminum and stainless steel the best stainless steels that I found is the cheapo stainless steel that has probably a whole bunch of different style types of metals, alloys inside there, you know. It's like you buy these cheap stainless steel lamps or whatever from, you know, the store that are made in China. They're not really really high quality stainless steel. There's all kinds of different metals put inside there. But either way, stainless steel and aluminum are a couple of the different materials that actually pick up radiant energy real well. And then over my course of studies and research on the wireless energy transfer, I realized that it was easy to charge capacitors using either one, because you could put a spark gap in between that metal and then turn around, and as that spark gap is jumping across there, it charges up the capacitors. And with that said, then you could actually put a small load on a small capacitor and actually have that thing run in real time with just that energy that's jumping across that spark gap. So I kept on researching into the plasma technology because I wanted to figure out a way by which I could create a really good tuner that I could actually tune to different frequencies the energy that was being transmitted out the antenna side of it. And so with that said, in the old days and actually in the modern days, they use a variable capacitor to actually tune the channels, to turn the channels on your radios and such. So what I was doing wasn't nothing more than essentially creating what would be the equivalence of a high-tech variable capacitor using the plasma itself as the frequency generator, as the part that's doing the capacitance. It's actually changing the frequency of what's being transmitted. So I got to thinking about that and kept on working with that, and I figured out that it was highly possible to take something like the Van de Graaff generator that builds up a static charge and charge capacitors, Wimshurst, Lord Kelvin generator, so many different high voltage generators out there. And I noticed that whenever you was running a load off of those types of systems with the spark cap going across there, it didn't couple back to the field like it would be in a generator head. See, that bogging down that we were talking about in the generator was from the when the thing is running without a load on it, the electrons aren't making a return path back to the coils, and so you don't get no back EMF. But once you turn the light bulb on, that completes the circuit, and it is a direct path right back to the coils, which in turn begins to build up a second field inside there that starts to act like a brake and slows down the armature of that generator. And so how could you get past this? How could you defy that back EMF? Well, the only way that I could figure this out was to think back to the mercury arc rectifier and what its actual purpose was. The mercury arc rectifier actually was a pretty impressive plasma reactor. When Edison was doing the DC current, and then Tesla and Westinghouse were actually trying to get the system all shifted over to AC current, by the time that got done, they already had in place an infrastructure that had electric motors that ran things like elevators and such. And so now that the power grid, the new coming power grid, would be running off of AC current, there had to be a way to rectify that AC current into DC current so that you could still run these high voltage DC motors. And so there's where the mercury arc rectifier came into play. It essentially had a little pool of mercury at the bottom. It had a couple anodes and cathodes in there, and You'd send the high voltage AC in, it'd heat up the mercury and vaporize it in the gas, and then the high voltage coming in would basically go turn into the plasma state. All that argon up inside there being energized, or all that mercury vapor up there in there being energized, would be pressurizing inside there and amplifying the energy, the pressure of that high voltage AC in there. And then on the output side, the electrons couldn't travel back the other direction because there was so much pressure inside that tube from that plasma. And so essentially you had what was the equivalent of a rectifier, a diode, you know, a fancy looking one. And so there you go. He was able to turn high voltage AC into high voltage DC, and then be able to still run older stuff with that. So taking all that into consideration and realizing how that functioned, and then thinking about how the Tesla coil actually worked, and whenever you charge up a capacitor bank and then it finally gets to its full potential and it's able to literally leap across the spark gap and then pulse the coil, I knew that the energy could only go in one direction from that point, unless you had a capacitor bank on the opposite side that could literally charge up and then arc back across the other side. There was no way for the electrons to make a return path. So if you had the plasma reactor going, and then the energy that you were generating from the plasma reactor went to a spark gap that in turn charged the capacitors, you could get the capacitors to charge at a faster rate. A lot of the modern-day capacitors, they're getting some really good technology going on with capacitors. They'll charge and discharge really fast. And so that's what is needed for, you know, a really perfect system as far as what I'm talking about, charging via spark gap and then putting your load on afterwards. You put your load would be on the capacitor side of it, not on the generator side of it. So if you didn't have the back EMF, at the very least you should be able to reduce how much energy it actually takes to run that load, because there's no back EMF problem going on there. So if you think about this for a second, and you think about like how a Wimshurst generator works. As the wheels are spinning in opposite directions and picking up the static charge and then shooting across the gap and charging the capacitors down in there, the energy that can be stored in those capacitors can literally be lethal. It's amazing how much power you can store in just those. Some of them use what in tarnation they call them? Leyden jar capacitors. Some folks have been making these capacitors out of nothing more than PVC and aluminum foil. But either way, they store a massive charge on there. You got to be really careful, because that's a lot of power. And the capacitors that I've been using, anywhere from 800 microfarads to 500 microfarad capacitors, 500,000 microfarad capacitors, like I used in the video 9 volts. These are probably really super dangerous as far as I'm concerned. But there are larger capacitors out there that you could probably get that have, you know, pretty much outdated, large, super oil filled or whatever. Anyway, so My concept for how electricity works, my theory about it all, and I kept on saying I don't care about currents, watts, or amps, or anything like that, because that's not what I was trying to do. Probably made a whole lot of people upset. Anyway, that's okay. They'll understand hopefully one of these days whenever I finish what I'm doing. why it was that I kept saying what I'm saying. The energy that I was trying to work with didn't require that until after you get to the load portion of it. All I wanted to do was to take a massive amount of high voltage, be able to charge real-time capacitors so that when, you know, normally if a capacitor discharges, it's almost like instantaneous. And so your load won't stay on very long. But you'll note that if you take an LED, which doesn't take a lot of energy to run, you can sit there and run that LED for quite some time. They do it on a small scale with little shake-up flashlights and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of folks out there doing wireless energy transfer where they're using pancake coils and little circuits to essentially pick up the energy, which could be done exactly the same way that I'm talking about, but it's done without a spark gap. Some of them are using transistors like little jewel thief circuits. And you can see that they seem to work pretty doggone well, but once you turn the power off, the initial power source, then the light goes out. It doesn't stay on very long. So essentially what I'm talking about is taking to be able to charge real-time a large capacitor bank with a lot of storage capacity that will run that load even after you shut the initial power off. It's basically no difference than a battery. As long as you're putting enough energy back to that capacitor bank, you can continue to run it as if it was a battery. There is a YouTube video out there that a man took six boost caps and basically made him a power pack that replaced his automotive battery in his car. And he was able to run the car as per normal. The alternator kept the boost cap charged up, and so he had enough energy in that to run whatever it was that he wanted to run and basically be able to restart the car when it was all said and done. So that's what I'm talking about. And so if you build a generator, a wind turbine or whatever that produces strictly high voltage or even just a static charge like you would get from the Wimshurst, you can take that energy and transfer it back into usable current. You could charge up regular batteries using capacitors. So with that said, then you totally bypass the whole back EMF portion right there, which at the very least, like I said, would save you a massive amount of energy because your generator head itself isn't actually working under a heavy load. Alrighty then. If anybody wants to call in, you know, just call me up on Skype there. Basically, that's what I'm working on as far as one of the devices that I'm hoping to put out here on YouTube pretty soon, and I'm hoping to incorporate that into a bunch of other projects as well, is to use strictly high voltage to charge capacitor banks and then run my load off of that. I've done quite a few videos on a small scale that basically show this concept. You can actually see wireless energy transfer to different types of materials, such as the aluminum foil pyramid that hangs above my table there. And also on the video that I did with the Shaziz coil is essentially a stainless steel platform there. Both of these materials are really good for picking up radiant energy. And it doesn't matter how small the spark is, how small the static discharge is. If you've got a gap between that discharge to the capacitor, you can charge those capacitors. And so if you build an earth circuit that can raise the high voltage up enough to make even the smallest tiny spark to jump across there, you can use that to charge capacitors. I've hooked capacitors directly to the dirt and was able to get up 0.770, somewhere around about volts, not enough to do a lot of work. Because after a while, it will level itself out, and then that's as high as it'll go, which really gets obnoxious. Anyway, so I'm looking more towards building a high-voltage generator that can energize argon gas or any of the inert gases out there. You've got helium and a few others that are really good, but it seems to me that the argon gas is the best. That's what I use. And so I'm going to build me a high-voltage version of a couple of the generators that I've already created to energize a plasma chamber, use that for my tuning purposes to tune the frequency at which it comes out the other side. Multiple purposes actually out of that whole entire process, but the ultimate goal is to be able to bring it up high enough to where I can literally charge any capacitor real time. And as long as you're using that energy on demand, then you don't have to worry about any problems from that point on. The WIMS Hearst would be a great version for a windmill to do such a deal there. You could use a small water wheel, or, you know, there's so many different ways to actually turn the disc that I'm talking about building. I'll take pictures and make videos and send everybody out schematics so that you can do it yourself as I'm doing mine, and then we can take it from there. But essentially that's what I'm going to be doing, is building a super high voltage generator and using that in to be the main power source, as opposed to the conventional way that you actually use a generator head. With that method, I believe that you could get more than enough energy out of not having to put near as much effort into it that you would be otherwise, because you don't have to worry about the back EMF portion. Your flywheel will essentially be freewheeling and then shooting a spark across the deal. And since the electrons can't travel back the other direction, then you'll be just fine. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and take a quick music break. It's been a very stressful morning. Couldn't get my doggone computer going, and so on and so forth. So with that said, I'm going to throw on a quick tune there about a little bit of Lynyrd Skynyrd. Hope you guys like that. Turn it up.
I'm magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they travel through the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside, the beaming light hit the ground.
Space, the final frontier. The
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. I'm back down to the last 10 minutes of the show. Once again, I apologize for the short show today. I had the computer problem thing going on. Anyway, back to that generator. One of the best things that I think about this way of using energy that I'm talking about, not only is it clean energy, but there's many methods by which if you're near running water that you could actually build up a static charge using the water and not harming the environment in the process. And also the fact that outside of, unless you're fixing to turn this style of generator head with an electric motor, then you don't have any magnets to deal with or anything. If you have the opportunity to go Google the Wimshurst machine and take a look at how that actually functions, and the Van de Graaff machine and see how it actually functions, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I've noticed that those Van de Graaff generators, those things, man, if you don't discharge that pretty quick, they build up one heck of a charge on that top load there. I still have my friend Cultus's Van de Graaff generator down in my lab, and fire that up every once in a while. You can literally feel the hair standing up on your head. It's like rubbing your feet on the carpet at Mach 10 or something, you know, building up a massive charge. And so with that said, using that energy right there to store in the capacitor banks and such, there's so many different ways to build up a static charge. The atmospheric group that out there, they have a couple 200-foot poles way up in the air, and they have a wire with carbon fibers or carbon nanoparticles all the way across there. Then they're literally pulling a couple thousand volts right out of the air. And there is an equation out there as far as static energy or radiant energy, how, or every so many feet you get off the ground, how many volts you're going to end up with. Cultus was doing some work on the atmospheric motor and stuff like that, and they were, their other people were flying like little drones up in the air with wires attached to them. You know, it goes all the way back to story about Ben Franklin and flying a kite, you know, and discovering electricity and so on and so forth. Of course, I don't think that that's actually where, who initially discovered electricity, if you know what I'm saying. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. What I'm talking about doing in my research, it doesn't defy any of the laws, the known laws of physics, nor does it defy any of the known laws of how electric functions and all that kind of stuff. It just kind of redefines how you use it, you know. There's frequency waves in all different directions. There's waves coming from space. There's waves all around you. Sound waves, you know, pressure waves, whatever, wind. Everything that moves on this planet is producing energy in some sort of frequency wave itself. You yourself are actually producing energy. And so with that said, learning how to tap into what nature has already provided. You know, you're not taking away, you're not creating, nor are you destroying. You're just using as the wind blows by, you're turning a turbine to do some work. Now, the generators like the actual flux wind turbine that Muddy Mudman builds and shows people on his YouTube, those are pretty good for standard the way that you're using energy. However, I'd like to try to take that same style of system and change it up a bit to where it was producing nothing but high voltage and see how fast that I could charge capacitors using that same style system. And it wouldn't matter how fast the wind was blowing, as long as that thing was turning, it would be putting out some serious high voltage. And then as far as the current watts and amps issue that got me in so much trouble, that wouldn't even be an issue anymore, because I'm not using it in the standard form. I can take that high voltage, I can energize argon gas, I could actually energize fluorescent light bulbs. So, you know, there's a trick that you learn from using Tesla technology about the whole, you see where they're holding up a fluorescent light bulb up in midair and it's lighting up. Well, also, I've used that same technique to go out to my car to see if any of my spark plug wires were bad. If you get anywhere in the range of a bad spark plug and it arcs across to that tube, you're not going to get shocked, obviously, but that bulb will light up. Keep in mind, you can't do this in broad daylight. You have to do it in the dark, but you'll definitely see when that light bulb lights up. Most generally, at night anyway, you should be able to see a spark if it's arcing across to something, but either way, it works. And so essentially that high voltage discharge that's coming out of the shorted spark plug wire is doing the same exact thing that the Tesla coil is doing, except it's doing it wirelessly with the Tesla coil. And if you got a hard enough arc, you can do that with anything. I've even seen people take CB radios and energize the gas in those fluorescent bulbs. And I also did a video here just recently where you can see using fluorescent bulbs to actually charge up capacitors. So you're taking that energy from one form and actually getting visible light using that fluorescent bulb, plus turn around charging a capacitor with it. This is what I'm talking about. It's not rocket science. It's just taking everything that I've learned throughout all my research and putting it together to try to get around the whole back EMF thing, you know, or the cogging effect of magnets. So if you can take magnets completely out of the equation and just create your own magnetic fields with pulses of energy, number one, you shouldn't have a whole lot of waste energy. It should all be going through your system, and then that's getting used. It's not creating a big magnetic field waste field around there. So it wouldn't be dirty electricity, so to speak. That'll probably get me beat up. Anyway, folks, I hope that some of what I shared with you today is informing, lets you understand what it is I'm talking about. I call my radio show Mad Science for a reason, because I look out there at all the old technology and I look at the new technology. And we should be so much further advanced. We shouldn't be fighting over oil or any kind of... There is no energy crisis. Never has been. It's just a way that people can manipulate you into fear. The planet's going to burn up, or the global warming, the ice caps are going to melt, and so on and so forth. And you think that the average Joe would realize it should be a red flag when they're heading directly towards your wallet that something isn't on the up and up. I mean, look, go check the budget for Al Gore and see how much money he made off of global warming, and he's not the only one. There's a whole lot of people fat catting it off of that. And it's all crock. It's all built on bogus science. None of it's true. And it's just aggravating as all get out. But we should have electric cars. We should have cars running off of hydrogen. You know, there are hydrogen electronics, electricity. You could actually, whenever the hydrogen atom and the oxygen atom recombine into water, then you get a discharge, a field going on there. So there's people that are building energy cells using hydrogen. They'll separate the hydrogen with a low voltage, and then they'll recapture the energy as those hydrogen and oxygen molecules are coming back together and making water. We can burn water in our vehicles, but yet we're not doing it. Here's the Navy talking about 2016, they're going to be doing it. So with that said, stay tuned for the Hope Show. I hope you all join me over for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. With that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.